Welcome to Breathe, Baby, Breathe, a podcast from Community Healing Network where we engage culture carriers in conversations that light the path to emotional emancipation and cultural healing for people of African ancestry. Come, breathe in the fresh air of African values.
Welcome to episode 2 of the Breathe, Baby, Breathe podcast. I am Chandra Roxanne, your host for this episode, and we are delighted to speak with the founder and president of Community Healing Network, Enola G. Aird. President Aird, welcome.
I am thrilled to be with you, Chandra, as always, and thrilled to have this opportunity to breathe in the fresh air of African values, to be focused on where we need to be, what we're being called to be, in this very, very challenging and difficult time, but it is also a time that is rich with possibilities. And so we're grateful, we're working hard with great expectancy.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I know that you are very much aware and always cognizant of the ancestors being with us in this work. And so I wanted to start off our conversation with, who are your people and who are you accountable to?
I am a daughter of God and ancestors, most immediately of Ernesta Carmen Aird, Ernesta Carmen Reed, her maiden name, Randolph Aird, my mother and my father, my grandparents, Eldika, Aline, and Charles Reed, and Elise White, and Alan Aird, my paternal grandparents. And then we don't go back much further than that in our knowledge, except that I do know that Eldika's father, Samuel Aline, was a loyal follower of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And when I wonder, as I wake up in the middle of the night, troubled by some issue or another about Black people, taking Black people so much to heart, when I think about why I love Black people so irrationally, I account it to him, who I don't know very much about him, but my mother and my aunts used to say that he would get dressed up to go on Sundays to these meetings, and they just knew that when he was going there, he was dressed in his Sunday best, of course, and when he was going there, he was going with a profound sense of pride and coming back with a profound sense of pride. That he was markedly different physically in his appearance after having been with his people, to think about and to talk about the possibilities of transforming life for Black people on this planet.
Wonderful. There are a couple of things that I want to really pull out of what you said, because it does connect to the work of CHN. But just before I do that, who is following in your footsteps in your family?
Well, they are here behind me, my two children. And so I am accountable with my husband to two children, Leah Christina Aird Carter and Andrew David Aird Carter. And one absolutely wonderful, amazing in every way, a two-year-old grandson whose name will remain unspoken because his parents want him to be completely anonymous to the world, which I very much admire. He's not even, there's no footprint on him. He has no footprint on Facebook or any other social media.
Wonderful. And have you connected or have you tracked your roots, you know, to any parts of Africa?
Not yet. I'm working on that.
Wonderful.
Very much looking forward to it.
Wonderful. So listening to all of this, you obviously are coming from this really great lineage and you yourself are inspiring and have literally created the next generation that's going to continue on this lineage. So what was really the impetus for Community Healing Network?
It was no one thing. There were so many things. There were so many steps along the road that when I'm asked, I'll pull up a story here or there. There was the story of Dee Dee, which I tell on the website about seeing her, meeting her in a nightclub one night in Washington, D.C. And as she got more and more inebriated, we met, she just accidentally in the restroom, and she'd come out of her stall and was not aware of my and my friend's presence there. And she looked in the mirror and she said words that I will never, ever forget. "Here you are, Dee Dee, old, black, and ugly as usual." And I was so hurt and pained by that, to know that she would feel that way about herself, but then recognizing that so many people, because of the lie of white superiority and black inferiority, so many people all around the world, even in Africa, feel that way about themselves, in the sense that is a crime against our humanity. That is the most fundamental crime against our humanity, in that it interferes so fundamentally with our ability to love ourselves and each other. Because if you've got that, you've got everything. You're grounded, you're solid, and you can move forward. And so that was the fundamental disruption. And that experience for me summed it up. Samuel's daughter, Eldika, had her second child, and this is something that I say with profound love for her. She was my grandmother. But it's a recognition of the fact that for a long time, the work of passing on the lie of white superiority and black inferiority has not been done only by white people, but also by black people. Mm-hmm. And so my aunt, Edna, who's right back there with me, would say, that her mother, my grandmother, told her when she was born, it would be several weeks before my grandmother could hold her because she was so, so black. And Tia, my aunt, would cry. And I share that story because it is part of telling the truth. And our mantra, as you know, is to defy the lie and embrace the truth. And defying the lie says that we have to lift it up. We have to say what has been done so that we can, in fact, defy it.
And so what is the vision and the mission for CHN, if you could summarize that?
Well, the vision is a world in which Black people have moved beyond surviving and are flourishing in body, mind, and spirit, beyond surviving to flourishing. An earlier vision of it was moving beyond the pain of the blues to the sky blue of unlimited possibilities. That's why sky blue is our color, because we want to look to the sky. Garvey says, "Let the sky and God be your limit, and our limit, and eternity our measurement." And so we want to always focus on the unlimited possibilities. The mission is to heal, to mobilize people across the African diaspora, Black people across the African diaspora, to heal from the trauma caused by the lie of white superiority and Black inferiority, to free ourselves of toxic stereotypes that have burdened us for centuries, and to reclaim our dignity and our humanity as people of African ancestry.
Now, what's really interesting is that it is the lie of Black inferiority and white superiority. They kind of go hand in hand.
But yeah, it's one lie, the lie of white superiority and Black inferiority, because there's a white, it's the conception of whiteness. First of all, it's the conception of race to begin with, which is all a fiction. But then it's the conception of whiteness as superior that then makes Blackness inferior.
Right.
So yes, and we see it as one thing, one big that lie, a toxic lie, and really the most powerful weapon ever formed against us as people of African ancestry.
And that lie shows up in various iterations.
Everywhere. It is the air we breathe. It is the air we breathe, and why it operates automatically, right? Mm-hmm. So that when policemen see Black people, they, as a result of conditioning and having been born into a world in which the air is just full of this notion of white superiority and Black inferiority, they operate on it automatically. And so when we wonder how the policeman a few days ago can actually walk behind a Black man who was just walking, pull his t-shirt, put a gun to his back, and shoot him 7 times in his back in front of his children. That level of inhumanity comes from, it's a reflexiveness that comes from 600 years of conditioning that these people are less than. These people are not like us. We have over 600 years been doing whatever we wanted to do with them. And thank goodness now we have the media to help us see what has been going on for 600 plus years.
Yes, I would like to talk to you more about our brother Blake and what it is that you see in this moment, especially regarding CHN and CHN's work. But you said something really interesting about working with Black people who have internalized this lie. And I first would like for you to go to explain the difference between white supremacy, because that's the popular word right now, as opposed to white superiority. I know that you're very particular about the words that you choose. And so is this the same thing?
It's all part and parcel, but there are nuances. So white supremacy is something that when you mention it, people go, we know what that is. It's people with white coats and hoods and, you know, burning things. And that's really bad. Everyone agrees that's really bad, right? Mm-hmm. Or most people will say that. Whether they truly believe it or not is neither here nor there, or it is there. But the question of the lie of white superiority and the lie of Black inferiority are very, very subtle. They just exist. Having been told 600 years ago, starting in the 1400s, led by Prince Henry the Navigator, recorded by his scribe Zurara, and then finding its way into essentially every system in the world, religion, first and foremost, law, medicine, psychology, literature, media, all forms of media, and it's everywhere. It's knitted through, quilted through all of our systems. And it is there operating in a very quiet way. White supremacy is, the idea of it is very frontal. It's like, you know, coming in to get you in the middle of the night. White superiority and Black inferiority, white superiority just is, it is part and parcel of who we are. And it exists in people and in institutions that think they are not, that believe they are not. And so the lie of white superiority and Black inferiority knitted through all of our institutions, very much a part of the air that we breathe, the cultural air we breathe, has to be recognized, acknowledged, and actively attacked. Otherwise, it's just going to continue doing what it does, which is what it has done for 600 years, is motivating people's actions in sort of unconscious, subconscious ways.
And, you know, what's really fascinating about what you've said is that, you know, when it comes to white supremacy, that's something that strictly white people can do. But the lie of white superiority and Black inferiority can live within Black people.
And it lives, I believe it lives within everybody.
Everyone.
Again, you've got this cultural setup.
Exactly.
And let me be clear that, you know, this has not always been so. There was a period in history, certainly in the beginning of history, where history originates and human civilization originates in Africa. And so for a very long period of time, Africans are, in fact, part of the human family, give birth to, originate the human family, and are part of it. But somewhere along the 1400s, with the Portuguese having heard of the phenomenal riches that lie within Africa, it's embark on this process to try to tap those riches. And in the process, they discover that part of the riches are African people. And with the collaboration of other African people, do engage in what they call the transatlantic slave trade, what I call the transatlantic trafficking, what many of us call the transatlantic trafficking in human beings, begins around the 1400s. And Prince Henry, as a good Catholic, as a good Christian, has to rationalize, justify the work that he is about to engage in terms of the enslavement of Africans. And what's interesting about the enslavement of Africans is that, you know, enslavement is as old as humanity itself. It's always been with us in generations. But this is a kind of enslavement that really marks an entire continent and marks an entire continent and its people as inferior, as subhuman in essence. Isabel Wilkerson's, whose book I've not read, new book is called Caste. And it is my understanding that, you know, she's going along with, you know, some of these themes. She's raising the point that what we have really is a caste system, you know, a kind of caste from which you cannot escape. And everybody, even though we're not currently enslaved, everybody who bears this insignia is part of the denigrated group.
And what's really, you know, kind of tragic and diabolical.
Diabolical is an excellent word.
Yes. And
diabolical genius, I have to say.
Yes, yeah, so the diabolical genius.
It's so effective.
Right, because going back to your pledge about defy the lie and embrace the truth, defy the lie of Black inferiority, embrace the truth of Black humanity, it's interesting because our very humanity, or the literal mark of our humanity, has been turned against us, and we can't get out of it. Right?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can, and we will.
We can't take off our skin and put some.
No, we can't.
So it's like, you know, it's like someone diabolical in the sense that someone has taken our very nature and has made it this caste,
mm-hmm,
in a way.
Correct. For, you know, good reasons from their point of view, it helped enrich the Western world.
Right.
But it also impoverishes Africa and Africa's people wherever we are in the main. Although some, you know, individuals do pop up and individuals do get rich. But the condition of Africa, the condition of African people is one of impoverishment versus enrichment of the West. But it is at the cost. It is at the price of the impoverishment of Africa.
Yeah, and that also happens internally. So I think the psychological toll that takes, you know, coming back to, that leads to what I think your friend Didi was saying about herself, the sort of the mm-hmm. self, and looking at yourself and saying old, ugly, unacceptable, whatever that lie is.
Right, and there's just too much of that. And part of, you asked earlier what, you know, what was the motivation? It was just, one, because I love Black people so much, because I see so much beauty. It was wonderful to see Jacob Blake's mother yesterday say, as you can see, I am a beautiful Black woman, right? Even in the midst of that, she affirmed her beauty, not just on the outside, but her beauty and her dignity as a human being.
Right.
And it's that, and Nina Simone talks about it. She says, I love Black people so much, paraphrasing, I am compelled to help change the world so that Black people and everybody will see that and value that and count it worthy.
How do you help Black people? How does CHN help Black people who have obviously been raised in this, nurtured in this, groomed in this? How do you, how does CHN, what is the CHN's approach to changing that, to heal?
First of all, we lift up the fact that there are ancestors and elders and people who have been working for Black people to be completely free for generations. Marcus Garvey, emancipate yourselves from mental slavery, because some might free the body, no one but ourselves can free the mind. Carter G. Woodson, urging us to recognize and correct our miseducation. Stephen Biko, recognizing that and stating that the most powerful weapon of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. Dr. Maya Angelou, exhorting us to take a day to heal from the lies we've been told and the ones we've told ourselves. Martin Luther King saying that any movement for the Negro's freedom that overlooks the necessity of psychological freedom, what we call emotional emancipation, is only waiting to be buried. The Negro will only be free, he says, when he reaches down into the inner resources of his own soul and signs with pen and ink of assertive manhood and womanhood his or her own emancipation proclamation. And so it's being inspired and animated by all of those pieces of wisdom over the generations and saying, how do we develop an infrastructure to do what they have been calling us to do as a people for a very long time? Now, in the 60s, we had this wonderful, powerful, you know, in 60s and 70s, this Black is beautiful moment, but it was just a moment. We needed to recognize that we needed to do deeper work. So the work that Dr. King says, we've got to, you know, reach down into the inner resources. That's not something that you can do in a very short period of time. You've got to be deliberate about it. And so Bell Hooks says, we need places like AA for critical consciousness where we can do the work. From our point of view, where we can look at our history and recognize that, you know, there was an, you know, Africa is the cradle for human civilization. That's where it all started. It was a huge and beautiful civilization that Skip Gates, the Harvard historian, says was as splendid and glorious as any on the face of the earth, comparable or even better than the Greeks and the Romans before the Greeks and the Romans. Right? But all that history has been erased by the telling of one simple lie, repeated over and over and over again in many, 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 many places and reinforced by violence and terror. So we defy the lie by telling and embracing the truth. And I just have to give props to two people in terms of the coining of the phrase, defy the lie and embrace the truth. My daughter came up with defy the lie. And Linda James Myers, a psychologist who was a former president, past president of the Association of Black Psychologists, has said, that's good, but that's not enough. We have to have something that we reject, but we have to have something that we embrace. And so embrace the truth came from her. And so these two Black women of two different generations gave us defy the lie and embrace the truth, Leah Carter and Linda James Myers. And so what we have attempted to do since 2006, what we have been doing since 2006, is building an infrastructure, putting into place initiatives that can help us build this global grassroots movement for the emotional emancipation of Black people to heal and end the trauma caused by the lie. We started with community healing days because we thought we should have something like Earth Day, right? If we want to raise awareness about the lie and the impact that it continues to have on us, let's put time for healing on the Black community's agenda. Let's make it a priority. And so third weekend of every October, we call people to a celebration, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, body, mind, and spirit, to focus on healing, to raise awareness, to mobilize our community, to share healing strategies. That's number one. Number two, the Defy the Lie, Embrace the Truth pledge campaign, to just make that personal statement that we are not going to perform to this script anymore. We recognize it for what it is, and we're peeling off. We're no longer going to participate in this narrative grounded in the lie. We are going off creating a new narrative, regrounding ourselves in African values, African understandings of what it means to be human, and we're embracing the truth of our humanity, and our future is going to emphasize our humanity. Emotional emancipation circles, reaching out to establishing, originating them here in New Haven around 2000, because we started in 2006, around 2008, 2009, we started having these meetings that we're calling emotional emancipation circles, trying to figure out how do we do what Dr. King said, which is how to create a space to reach down and do that inner work, to do what Bell Hooks is saying, which is places for critical consciousness, starting where people are. So emotional emancipation circles grew out of that, but also the recognition, I'm a lawyer, I don't know how to really do this, and that there's a psychological component to this. I can figure out from the movement building point of view what it ought to be like, but needing to make sure that it was psychologically sound and culturally grounded, and God and ancestors led me to the Association of Black Psychologists. And we were connected through someone who would become a board member, Wisdom Powell, Dr. Wisdom Powell, who was at UNC, is now at the University of Connecticut. I explained to her what we were working on, what we wanted to do. We had this ambitious vision of building a global movement for emotional emancipation. She'd been introduced to me through my husband, and when she and I talked, she said, you know, as it happens, I know the person, the sister who's about to assume the presidency of the Association of Black Psychologists. Let's get her on the phone in a couple of weeks, and we talk. That was Cheryl Grills, and you know how marvelous she is and what a tremendous partner she has been in helping us to make sure that the emotional emancipation circles are in fact psychologically sound, culturally grounded, community defined, and she has been our chief ambassador in terms as leader of our EEC training team, traveling all over the world to plant seeds for emotional emancipation circles. That collaboration with the Association of Black Psychologists has lasted through her presidency, through the presidency of Daryl Rowe, the presidency of Kevin Washington, the presidency of Huberto Jackson Lohmann, and now the presidency of Dr. Theopia Jackson. And we certainly expect that it will last into all the presidencies to come, because we are working very closely together to make sure that this is a movement that reaches across the diaspora, to make sure that we are all Black people within a very short period of time, because it's not going to take us 600 years to get out of here.
Right.
We have, as you know, said that because we like to impose deadlines on ourselves.
Yes.
That we want to make 2020 to 2030 the decade to defy the lie of Black inferiority and Black white superiority and Black inferiority and embrace the truth of Black humanity. So in 2020 to 2030, we're going to be packing in a lot of activities that emphasize that in addition to Black Lives Mattering, which is so really true and fundamental, that there's a deeper understanding, there's deeper work to be done. And that deeper work has to be our reclaiming our rightful place in the circle of humanity, in the human family. And so the emphasis for us is on humanity. So that's
wonderful. And I just wanted to say that, and is it true that the late great Dr. Maya Angelou had a hand in the initial hand in the beginning of CHN's birth, I will say.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We were inspired, Community Healing Days was in a fundamental way inspired by that phrase before we met her. Mm. take a day to heal from the lies you've been told and the ones you've told yourself. And years and years before, I had met a woman named Betty. Mayor Neal. Betty Neal. And we had talked about this notion of internalized depression. It was a shared concern and interest of ours. And then we subsequently met on vacation. And this was after I'd founded Community Healing Network. And I said, hey, guess what I did? This was around just a little bit before 2000, around 2007. With 2008, let's see, when did Barack Obama get elected? Do you remember?
I think it was either 2009 is when he came to office.
Okay, yeah, so it was just a little bit before that. Right. And so we're on vacation, we're talking, and I said, we're starting this thing, Community Healing Days, based on Dr. Angelo's quote. And she goes, I have a friend who knows Dr. Angelo. Why don't you come over to, have lunch and we can talk with her? Well, that friend introduced us to Dr. Angelo. We ended up going to her apartment in Harlem for lunch. She expressed a real appreciation for the vision that we had. We asked her if she would sponsor or be part of our first fundraiser. And she said that she would, but we would have to pay her because people don't value things they don't pay for. It turned out that she charged us $75. But this was our first major fundraiser at Riverside Church in Manhattan. And it was very powerful. There are snippets of it on the internet and I think on our website. But it was very powerful. She introduced us to the world and our mission to the world on that night. And it was extraordinarily powerful.
So it's lovely. So you have not only her poem, but her breath breathing through this as well. And
we're so grateful for it. We really are. She continues to inspire us and inspire us by just, saying yes to the vision and, giving her energy to promoting the work that we're doing.
You know that I often look at you as an elder.
As you should, given my age. Yes.
Not just your age, but also just the breadth of knowledge, which, we have been able to taste here just in explaining your vision for Community Healing Network and this idea of white superiority and black inferiority and what I would like to do is, we have a few minutes left, and we are now in a very troublesome time. And just a few days ago, our brother, Jacob Blake, and you had mentioned this earlier, has been attacked. Again, another one of us in our humanity being disrespected and hated. For the world to see. And so I would like for you, with your elder hat on, to talk to us about where we're at, what you're seeing.
Again, because we always look to our ancestors for wisdom, I would like to say, as Marcus Garvey told us, that we have a beautiful history and we shall create another in the future that will astonish the world. And I want to say and repeat that I believe that with every fiber of my being. And then I want to say that because of the lie, that history was disrupted. That history was cut off. And the lie has had a very good run. It has done a lot of damage. But it is coming to an end. Baldwin says that people are trapped in history and history is trapped in them. We are trapped. But as we said when we convened in Richmond last year in August to observe the 400th anniversary of the first recorded forced arrival of Africans in the United States, as we convene to make a decisive break, a spiritual break, between a past that has been grounded in the lie of white superiority and black inferiority, and a future that we are creating for ourselves that is going to be driven by, determined by, the truth of our humanity. As we met to do that, we said that we are escaping. We are escaping. We're no longer considering ourselves trapped. We're peeling off, and we're asking black people across the diaspora to come with us, to come with us to a place in which we have the problems of human beings and not the extra burdens that come with being black in an anti-black world, because we are changing that. We are recognizing the root cause of our dilemma, the root cause of nearly all the challenges we face as people of African ancestry. We are bound and determined and intent on freeing ourselves, healing ourselves, and then freeing ourselves and our children and the world from the lie. Now, do we know exactly how to do that? No. Our emotional emancipation circles are the initial spaces, and all the other strategies that we've developed are the initial platforms on which we begin to do the internal work of freeing ourselves from the lie. And then giving ourselves and teaching ourselves and practicing together the emotional wellness skills that we need to be at our best as individuals and as a people. And then knowing that we come from the people who made a way out of no way, knowing our strength, knowing our amazingness. Think about this. Every achievement that has been made by black people over the course of the last 600 plus years, every step that we have taken has been taken with the weight of the lie on our shoulders. And then think about how much we've accomplished. Think then about how much more we will be able to accomplish once we take the time to heal and free ourselves of the lie entirely. So I am so hopeful and so optimistic and so sure that we will create a beautiful history in the future, as Garvey said. And I think in this moment, as we look at the pandemic and see ourselves in these multiple pandemics, really.
Yes.
We see what has happened is that the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, in some fundamental ways has shown the bankruptcy of the Eurocentric worldview, the I think, therefore I am, the radically individualistic, it's all about me, it's all about materialism, it's all about instant gratification. And it has said to us, the only way we can survive as human beings through this pandemic and going into the future, I believe, is if we adopt the African, the original people's way of being. I am because we are. I cannot be me without you. The more communal, the more needing each other in order to survive. That's what the mask thing is all about, trying to teach us the lesson that if we're to survive, we have to do it together. Mm. And so I think about a brother I met in Omaha, Nebraska on our Global Truth Tour last year. And he said that that we black people embody in our very incarnation the struggle for the definition of what it means to be human. It means to me that we've been the battlefield on which has been fought out this battle between the I think, therefore I am, and the I am because we are. I am because we are will win. Hmm. There's no question about it, because it's obvious. That's the only way to survive.
It has to win.
And thrive and flourish, and it will. But we, as African people, as people of African ancestry, now have a role to play.
Yeah.
Because we have to champion those values. They are our original values. We have to champion them. That, am I saying that, you know, that Africans have, you know, like we're the be all and end all in terms of we don't do anything wrong? Absolutely not. It matters what you aspire to. If you aspire to, I think, therefore I am, you end up in a very bad place. If you aspire to, I am because we are, you have the possibilities of something that's richer and more open to the fullness of what it means to be a human being. And so I am so excited about the fact that my generation has important, vital messages and vital, not information, but wisdom to transfer urgently to our young people. To know that this is working itself out. The old is dying. No matter what you see in the conventions and all, the old is dying. And something new is being made. Something better is being made. And we have a crucial role in defining what that will be. And it has to be, I am because we are. That is, in fact, a very central element, Ubuntu, a very central element of the EE Circle experience. The EE Circle experience is a Sankofa experience. It's not, we're not creating something entirely new. We are going back to fetch the values that have held us together, the make a way out of no way values that held our ancestors together and even now are holding us together.
Yep.
And figuring out how do we really reinstall them within ourselves? How do we deepen our understanding of them so that we can make sure to transfer them to our children so that they can live, so that they can flourish, and move beyond surviving definitively? And so we're escaping. As you have told me that we ought to keep emphasizing that we are escaping, and we ought to keep emphasizing inviting people to come with us. We're going to a place where we as African people, as a result of the EECs, are back in our right minds, where we see ourselves as the truly beautiful and lovable and capable and worthy and intelligent human beings that we are, where our children see that. They know that when they look in the mirror, they don't have a DD problem at all. They see the beauty. They see the capabilities, they see the possibilities, and they are able to step into their potential and live it fully. That's where we're going. And we're going to a world where Black people, because this has to be righted, because this journey has not been for naught, Black people will be valued as the beautiful and wonderful human beings we are. But we've got to reclaim it. And then the question for others, people who are not Black, is, who will welcome us back into the circle of humanity and how?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a world that excites me to be a part of. And it actually makes me proud to be Black and proud to be called to such a time as this. And that
and the journey in and of itself is an exciting one, because I know I'm not probably going to see it. It's going to take a while. And this is going to be difficult. There will be pain. There's always pain in giving birth to something new. There will be. But the knowledge is that at the end, that something new does come to be.
Ah, so wonderful. One final question before we wrap up the episode. For our non-Black allies who may be listening to this or wondering, what is their role? What would you say? What would you offer them?
I think this virus of the lie, the virus that the lie has created over the course of generations, has infected everybody. So we are all sick. So as we do our work of healing, we are bound and determined and will do. There really can be no prospect of intra-racial healing unless non-Black people do their own work, because it's like whiteness and proximity to whiteness has been the definition of human value. That's like the height of human value, whiteness and proximity to whiteness. So all our friends who are close to white and all So we all have to do our work. We all have to do our work of cleansing our brains, our minds, and our spirits of this notion of the hierarchy, of the human hierarchy. It is an absolute fiction. We know biologically we're all like 99.9% the same. Yep. It is a fiction. So the first job is to, well, the first job is to deal with the lie, I think, and recognize all the inequalities that that lie has brought to bear. But ultimately, we've got to get rid of the hierarchy entirely. And so what I would say to answer your question is those who would be allies are invited to do their own work. There are lots of people who are, you know, white people who are doing Tim Wise, Peggy McIntosh, doing work around issues of white privilege, whatever they call it. And there's a continuum of, you know, our Latino brothers and sisters and our Asian brothers and sisters who, because of their proximity to whiteness, may think themselves better than us. There's work to be done along the hierarchy. And so let's all be busy about doing our work, recognizing that to one degree or another, we are all infected by this virus, and that we need to work on it within our own minds and spirits before we can have any hope of coming together across across differences to work together to heal interracially, intergroup. And, you know, for people who have resources, please support our work, but don't ask us to do anything that don't tell us what to do. We know what to do. We don't need your help, your guidance. We are bold enough to say that. We're bold enough to say that these spaces have to be all Black spaces. We don't have to explain it. This defiance has brought us that far. So if you want to support our work as it is, as we deem it necessary to be, great. If you want to change it, you want to modify it, thank you, but no thank you.
And on that lovely note, thank you for this time, this wisdom.
Thank you, Chandra. You just really, it's a joy, you know, it's a joy to work with you, and it's a joy to converse with you. And to know that you are part of the generation to be left behind gives me tremendous, tremendous comfort and joy.
Same. Ashe.
Ashe.
And Saubona.
Saubona. And Ubuntu.
And as we opened with recognizing your ancestors and our ancestors, we would like to close on the words of one of our great ancestors, Miss Bea Richards, and her poem, her lovely poem, Today. Today is ours. Let's live it. Love is strong. Let's give it. A song can help. Let's sing it. Peace is dear. Let's bring it. The past is gone. Don't rue it. Our work is here. Let's do it. Our world is wrong. Let's right it. The battle hard. Let's fight it. The road is rough. Let's clear it. The future vast. Don't fear it. Is faith asleep? Let's wake it. Today is ours. Let's take it. Anola, thank you so much for your words, for creating Community Healing Network, for creating this beacon of light. And in the words and the spirit of Miss Richards, we are taking it today.
And I thank God and ancestors as I must.
And our children who are waiting.
Our children and our ancestors are waiting. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Breathe, Baby, Breathe. Listen in next month for another conversation offering emotional and cultural strength for the journey ahead. Visit communityhealingnet.org to learn more.